All right. Dudes are all finally here. You guys here all right?
What up, sir?
All right, we have Jonathan, Preeti, and Steven from MN.
Hello.
They brought a bunch of refreshments, like Pocky, you know.
Very important.
Kid-friendly refreshments. Anyway, besides kind of kicking it off with this interview, these guys are also be here till about 6 o'clock, actually.
That's right.
Running their office out of here, and then at 5 o'clock, they'll be interviewing the two guys from public school, Dai Yu Chow and Maxwell Osborne. So please stop by. Again, there is a shit ton of candy.
Extra delicious candy.
We knew we weren't enough of a draw. So.
It's like a pre-Halloween kind of tryout.
But just to put out there, in case anybody's heading down, it's Chinatown candy. So it's going to have like preserved plums. We got some fried baby crabs. Every flavor of Pocky.
Yeah.
Every flavor of Pocky possible, and the matcha green tea.
And of course, the sour lemons, which I feel were like everybody's,
super
every American kid's like first introduction to
absolutely
Asian candy.
Yes, come through.
So, these guys are architects, and we're actually working with them on a couple projects now, and very, very proudly working with them on a couple projects. And hey, thank you for taking the time out and coming out.
Yeah, it's an honor.
So. What I've been trying to do, and I don't know if this is the best way, but just kind of start backwards, or start from the now and kind of work our way backwards. We explained a little bit in the Instagram post kind of what you guys do, but I'd love to hear literally what you're doing as of today, the kind of work that you guys are doing. Like, what can you talk about the projects you're working on, or whatever you can talk about anyway?
Yeah. Where should we start? You know what? I'm not going to start since
yeah, we heard enough from you.
Exactly. So I'll leave it. I'll leave it to our creative director, aka also known as the magician in our office.
Here comes the magic. You guys couldn't see the smoke, but it was
in my seat.
Was that some sprinkle powder?
That was some. Yeah, that was glitter. All right. So right now, a range of projects that we're really excited to be working on. Undisclosed project, top of a pretty amazing building here in New York City, working on a great restaurant project with a really phenomenal chef. Got a couple things going for him right now.
Can you say what chef or no?
Yeah, we can disclose that. Right?
Nobody listens to this anyway.
Exactly. It's going to be like five people.
But
you guys don't tell anyone. We're working with Chef James Kent, who was a former head at Nomad, and his operating partner, Jeff Katz, new venture for them. We've got a couple of different projects with them that are pretty exciting. Wrapping up a pretty great project, one that's actually we launched with, which was it's been done for a little while now, but we feel like we're still kind of like finishing it up, which is a large factory in the Brooklyn Navy Yard for Cry Precision. Fantastic clients. It was a great kind of launch pad for us, and looking forward to sharing that project with the world pretty soon. You know, residences and things like that with some pretty interesting folks. Always been lucky to have some fantastic clients with some pretty big ideas for whatever they're working on. What else we got, guys, right now?
You know, it's if I had to take a step back, one of the things that's interesting, because we didn't have a chance. I didn't share it when Dong had me on Friday. But I do know it's stuff that we talk about with him and his team a lot, is that what's really interesting is that this show is actually the first time that you being Jonathan, creative director, and Steven being the, by title, operating director, the three of us as partners have actually never done any interviews, media, press, in the 4 years that we've been in operation.
So this could be disastrous.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm a little bit nervous because we actually didn't like go through any main talking points before this.
Yeah.
Excellent.
No, but
excellent.
All jokes aside, I mean,
it's all live and you can't take it back anyway. So
exactly. Live and recorded.
And recorded.
So we could be reminded later of the stupid shit that we said. But The reason why I share that is that we've been really lucky having launched in 2014 with two notable clients. One of them was Cry Precision. We did their headquarters in Brooklyn Navy Yards, 100,000 square feet. That's wrapping up. Another one is with Chef Masa Takayama, the notorious three Michelin star, ultra expensive chef, arguably probably one of the most talented in the world, but doing a series of restaurants for him. And it allowed us to get our career off the ground.
And you said you launched with those two projects.
Yeah.
I mean, those are pretty gnarly sort of dream projects to launch with.
Very gnarly.
And I, so how? So where did those, I mean, let's stick to those two clients for a sec. How did those two relationships come about?
So I'll speak to one of them, and then Steven will actually speak to the other, because the three of us had worked together in various capacities. Each of us have been practicing in New York for at least 10. Jonathan and I are at 15 plus years here in the city.
I'm a little younger.
He's the new blood.
But he's white, so he looks way older.
That's also true.
way older. I realize we're not on television because I'm Asian and Jonathan is Blasian.
Yeah.
We all have faces for radio. We've been told.
But
your voices sound great.
Dreamy.
So we had been working together, and our relation with our clients kind of just happened to come together around the same time. Chef Masa was somebody who I had known at that point for, I want to say, 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. Was introduced through some mutual friends, and what's interesting is that as a chef, he actually is a really great designer in general, loves to sketch and think about space and how he thinks of the space as stage for his food. So we used to go grab dinner and he would like wax poetic about his next concepts, and it's just like sketch right there.
And this was when you guys were already working with him, or that he just liked talking about design?
He just liked talking. I used to like go out to eat, sometimes his place, a few other places, and just became friends because I eat a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, yes. And
when you said, I mean, you were saying you guys were working together, mm-hmm, when you met. Like, what does that mean? Were you already starting an office? You worked at a different office together?
We worked at different offices.
Okay.
And then projects like this Masa one brought us together, so we collaborated on that. Yeah. And then around the same time, and the Masa one came about because when he was going to do his next big restaurant, he actually said to me, you know, of all the people I've spoken with about my concepts in space, you're the one that gets it. And would you like to work on this next restaurant with me? And it's like, you know, I'm going to give you this chance. And famous quote is like, don't fuck it up. So that was actually back in 2000.
And I guess you did not fuck it up.
Let's hope so. I mean, we did a series. We did two in New York alone and developed some concepts internationally. Both of them, I think, we might be biased, but they're actually quite beautiful. Capo Masa for Larry Gagosian on the Upper East Side, and then Tetsu down in Tribeca. So cool. Definitely go check them out. Really, really gorgeous spaces.
So, I mean, you guys are the first, well, it's only the second day, but the first group we've brought in that have come by. And I'm sure, you know, obviously the target for the radio show is kids, but really anybody that's looking to try to start something and trying to figure out how to start something, right, and or have started something and can't figure out if they're doing anything right or wrong. But a lot of them, I'm sure, also people that start their thing with friends or start their thing in a collective of some kind. So I was going to ask, did you guys meet as professionals first and then become friends, or the other way around?
Professionals.
Yeah. Met professionally. But I think something that, you know...
The club is professional, right?
yeah, exactly. De club. I think definitely we met in a professional capacity, but, you know, something that gave us the confidence to, you know, join forces officially was that we do also just enjoy, you know, hanging out with each other and being around each other. And, you know, you work a lot, so you want to enjoy the people you're around.
Yeah.
I'd say that's true of the three of us and our whole team. I think we really enjoy being together, and I think that's really important.
And so that was Stephen talking with a silky voice. And in line with that, because I was always curious, you know, how do you know? It's kind of weird thing, like, how do you know who you should start an office with? And I don't think there's obviously like a hard answer to that. But when you guys started working together, or even when you guys met, did you know right away? It's like, these are two dudes I want to start a thing with, or it kind of happened organically and suddenly you were working together?
I mean, I'll speak for myself because they're not actually my friends.
we can cut their mics if you want to do that too.
I would say on a very, like in hindsight, I think I realized that if you ever want to do something on your own, you're confident, you might be arrogant, but with both these guys, I guess I realized that they did things that I couldn't do or that I didn't want to do, but I would say that I couldn't do nearly as well as them. And I think, you know, one of the things, at least for me in starting out, was like, what are your weak points? What are things that you, if you really want to grow and be somebody, in the person of your wildest dreams, then you kind of realize that it takes, you know, a lot of collaboration, good people who share values, I think, people who aren't a-holes, and people who can kind of fill in blanks in your own thing. So I think part of, like, actually having a good partnership is being honest about yourself.
I mean, can we get into that a little more? Because I do think, actually, because all three of you, I see all three of you guys as designers, as architects, all super talented, and from the outside, none of you are you know, clearly the business guy, or clearly the drafting guy, or clearly the kind of like art world design dickhead. Maybe that's you, Steven.
No, that's John. That's John.
But
my cards. That's a magician, aka design dickhead.
But point being, I do think it's really important. Yeah. With a collaborative or with multiple partners to, like you said, define what you're good at, what you're bad at. So can you go through even just day to day in the most mundane ways what you guys do that the other person doesn't do, where your focus is at?
Yeah, Preeti should go first. That'll be fastest.
He spends his time at the other office.
That is true. I'm not going to deny it. Well, it's interesting because we do have very... the three of us have very defined roles. So when we formed this partnership, we actually spent, you know, you talk about starting something. I want to say we spent a good, when we decided that we're going to work together, we spent a good 6 months, probably at least 10 hours a week between meetings and calls and follow-up meetings. But about 10 hours a week for 6 months, laying out the business plan, the model, how we're gonna operate and function. And this is why the other clients, we kept working on that as well. And then we finally officially came together and launched August of 14,
no, in July. February of 15.
Yeah. God, man, time flies.
Yeah.
So.
But when you say, like, in terms of roles, like specifically, did you have a checklist of here's 100 things you need to do? You do 33.
So the way that we set up our business is that there are three. And this is silly to say this, but the way that we planned it is we planned for not the MN of today, but the MN that we saw ourselves in 5 to 10 years. So we don't want to be like a massive so-called corporate office, but we do see ourselves...
Just like a couple hundred.
Yeah, you know, something manageable, something easy. Yeah. But we were thinking to ourselves we'd at least like to be... probably in the neighborhood of, this can change, but neighborhood of about 30-ish. Okay. And so we were trying to think of how we would want to structure it. And playing to what each of us brought to the table, we created three verticals. One was the creative vertical that was led by our creative director. So, and that played to Jonathan's strengths as a magician. And, you know, we all love design, but sometimes you realize you work alongside somebody who's just like at some next level shit. Like, there's stuff that just comes naturally out of it. Comes naturally out of his mind where you just have to take a step back and be like, holy shit. And then for Steven, he's somebody who is incredible with numbers, with making, figuring out how things work. And has
he's created, wearing glasses.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly. That's why he's wearing glasses, and I took mine off. and so he's by title operating director, and so a lot of the it's kind of like pseudo COO slash even for our, especially our more complex projects, being really in there with the numbers in terms of project management, budgets, schedules, again, figuring out how to make things work.
Are the three of you guys involved in every project, or do you split up projects?
Not quite. I think on our projects that are either by scale or complexity or whatever the case may be, are on the larger side, I think we all have a role. Some of the, you know, more straightforward projects, you know, maybe only one or two of us are directly involved. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's the idea, that the three of us kind of make like one good architect, you know, when put together. And so, you know, we're all supporting on
you can
on
say projects. Great architect, yeah. If you want.
We'll get there. We'll get
there for now. I think the three of us together make one great architect. But that's the thing, is like, you know,
Preeti's our PR guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't clear. Even in my role as managing director and MD for an architecture firm is a bit unique, but, you know, being more on strategy, project pipeline, working on client management, as well as, like, you know, the we talk about it as the service of architecture, just strategizing around how to build a practice that we talk, you know, you and I don't talk about how important it is to build a practice that's sustainable, that, you know, we want to set it up so that we can do great work, so that the creative director doesn't have to worry about the pipeline and what's our account receivables or cash flows look like. He can just design. And then likewise, Steven, who sweats that stuff, you know, we work together closely to see, to manage how our projects come through. Are we delivering, keeping the clients happy? What's really fortunate is that while we haven't done any press or PR or marketing in the 4 years that we've been working, all of our work has been referral to date, because we're so big on making sure that, you know, not only do you want to deliver a project as close to on time, on budget, and make it incredibly beautiful, but you want the process to be really fulfilling, enjoyable for the client.
So. Also, I think it's like, you know, one thing that I find very rare with you guys is that you guys run your business very well, right? It kind of, and that's a big deal for architecture. There's not a lot of I mean, that's stereotypical, but also very true in terms of architects don't really know how to run a business. We're certainly not trained how to run a business.
Correct. Yeah.
I think you may luck into it. You may just fight your way through it for 10 years until you kind of click a little bit. But especially for a young design-focused firm, you guys, I mean, in my mind, probably one of the best young design firms that actually knows what they're doing from a business level.
Well, thank you.
From an operational level, from a kind of technical level, from a reliability level. And I say that not to compliment you guys. I mean, it's a compliment, obviously, but actually that it's not common to see, I think, people reach that level of realization where, like, I need help in certain ways or divide up our talents in certain ways to make that happen. So I guess the reason I want to set this up is the question is, individually, before you guys started working together, A, had you always wanted to start a practice, either your own or someone else? And B, did you imagine that it always would be a partnership with whether one or two other people?
Yeah, I'll take that one for myself anyway. I think I always, from basically graduation, had the goal of establishing my own firm, with the caveat that I'd be okay if it didn't happen. It wasn't like something I was diehard about, and I could have been happy, you know, helping another firm grow and prosper. But I think it was always more or less the goal to at least be able to, when the opportunity, should the opportunity strike, and it did. I think we were mentioning earlier with the project in the Navy Yard, and then quickly followed by the restaurant for Chef Masa. And so that was definitely the goal. But I also always knew about myself that the, like, sole proprietorship or the lone principal model was not attractive.
When you say you always knew that, did you always know that, or at some point you're like, I want to work with someone else? Like,
I guess I always knew the sole proprietorship model was not for me. That's not where I get my energy, like sitting in a space by yourself. I think some people can, you know, be in a quiet room by themselves and really, like, but I feed off the energy in the office. You know, we've grown a little bit over the years, and you know, the more people we have around that I can tell are busy doing things on various projects, it gives me energy to go do those things. And I actually did, you know, sit in my living room for a few months at the beginning by myself, and it was a challenge to stay. I don't think motivated. I was motivated. I was doing this like new, exciting thing. But just in the moment, stay focused, because it felt like, right. Well, if I'm doing this task, then these other 10 tasks right. aren't getting done. And
that's like in your mind.
It's in your mind. Yeah. But when other people are in the room, you can feel like, okay, everyone's doing something. I can focus on this one task okay. for whatever, an hour, 3 hours, whatever, and get it done. And it does feed back into what we were saying before, that the three of us have not just unique strengths, but I think we all do what we would want to be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, the mm-hmm. things that they do are the things that would get neglected if I had a sole proprietorship, because I wouldn't have the desire or the energy or whatever mm-hmm. to do those things.
Be secondary to kind of where
exactly. And I would do them because they're necessary, right. but they would definitely be the parts of the practice that would be neglected.
That kind of like jigsawing of... Get you another cup. Why don't you answer that question? I'll be back.
I will. I would say in terms of starting my own thing, I never had a desire to. I always thought that I would come into a team or an organization and help to build it out. Never thought about doing it from scratch. And so I think what was really unique about this opportunity is that Jonathan and Steve and I had worked together for a little bit, collaborating on these projects, and then had the opportunity to do something on our own. And what made it really great is that this partnership came about, just like Steven said, specifically everything that I knew was necessary to build a business but wasn't areas that I was good at or enjoyed doing, somebody else was actually doing it. So, you know, for us, we have very specific roles, and we've been able to just focus on the things that we do really well, and then we respect each other's roles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I will sometimes do something, and then Steve will be like, "You sure we should be doing that?" I'll be like, "Yes." And they'll be like, "Okay." And simultaneously, I'll turn to Steve and be like, "Man, that one project shouldn't we be here with that and this, doing that?" He'll be like, "Nope, absolutely not." Mm-hmm. And, you know, for us to be able to push back, we both push back on the design all the time. But, and then Jonathan will be like, "Fools, that's why you're not terrible. The magician, and that's why I'm wearing this cap, fool."
That smoke bomb, and
but yeah, I mean, it was an opportunity to be able to build something. And the most important thing, Steven said this, and it's not one to be taken lightly, is we came together first because we were aligned around similar values in terms of how we want to build a business, what it meant for us. We're, you know, a business that's built around transparency and ethics and being able to, like, help each other out and be supportive and build teams that we want to be able to foster and grow. And all that stuff was where we kind of, like, were drinking and waxing poetic about this first. And then it was like, yeah, you know, let's try to figure out how to make this work. And then it came up, like, you know, here's the different structures. Right. I'm really good on this MD side. Steven's good on this op side. Jonathan, we both know, mm-hmm. is phenomenal on the creative side. But the starting point was really around us mm-hmm. just wanting to figure out how to build, like, a different practice.
Mm-hmm. I didn't
right, Wizard?
Yeah, but I didn't actually ever want... I didn't plan to have a company yet. Like, it wasn't a thing. I'm not naturally entrepreneurial. But, you know, I think another way into it is the way that I got to kind of come into it, which was learning enough as you go along. And at some point thinking, you know, I would like a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. And that, like, what I have to say or what I want to do should be out there. And I think that applies to everybody, really. It's just a matter of finding your avenue. Or your avenue finding you, which is how I feel, honestly. I'm not a particularly strategic thinker in terms of business, or even in terms of my life, let's say. But but I've always been very lucky to be open to when opportunities present themselves and thinking, how can this, like, put me in a place that, you know, makes me happier, gives me some opportunities to do things. So I think that's another way to like walk into your own business, really. Because I was always intimidated by people who knew. I didn't even want to be an architect, to tell you the truth. So I think sometimes life happens to you, but it's also a matter of like grabbing it and going 100% once you get the opportunity.
I mean, that kind of brings up when you guys decided to make. So just as a quick history, you guys all went to architecture school.
That's right.
You guys all worked at firms after architecture school.
Yeah.
And then at some point, you guys started MN. Right. That's right. Basic lineage.
Yes. Yeah.
So that moment where you said, I'm going to quit my job. Mm-hmm. I'm going to join these other two dudes to start a practice. Obviously, there's no guarantee it's going to work out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember that moment? Or was like, how was it like, no, this is actually pretty solid. I feel very confident in this working out. You're like, well, fuck it. I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, I can get my old job back. Like, what was the kind of vibe?
I mean, I think for me, it was a little bit twofold. It was partially tied to this opportunity that I had with this great project, and it felt like, you know, probably once in a lifetime that gets overused, I think.
It was the Cry Precision project.
Yeah, that's right. You know, had an opportunity to build a relationship with those guys, and they put their trust in me the same way Chef Massa put his trust in Preeti. And so that felt like, you know, you need to listen to that. Mm-hmm. There was some aspect of that. But I think there was also, for me, the ultimate, it didn't feel so much like, you know, jumping off the diving board without knowing if there was water in the pool, because I was pretty much ready to move on. I was at a smaller firm and felt like, you know,
something's going to change.
Anyway. So it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to go try this. And if I fall flat on my face, mm-hmm. I'll just go get another job.
Sure.
Because that's, if I didn't try this, that's what I would do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be any worse for the wear. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, it didn't feel scary at all. Because it was just, I'm going to try it. And I recognize that a lot of small businesses fail. I mean, that's universal. That's not design. That's just a thing. And knowing that, you know, there are other architecture jobs, and I was happy at one before. I can be happy at one again, mm-hmm. you know. So that was, it didn't feel so monumental in that way, although it was very exciting mm-hmm. and felt monumental in that way. But
For Jonathan, especially because you said you didn't necessarily want to start a business.
Right.
That decision.
Wasn't scary?
Well, not even scary. Was it like, I mean, I'm just curious, like, because you could have, I'm sure, stayed at whatever company you went in and done very well. Oh, maybe not, actually. You should do this conversation.
Yeah, that's how I was able to jump. Shit. Well, I mean, the thing
I'm not going to get into the details of it, but.
The thing that I learned, actually, from, there's a really important lesson I learned when I was living in L.A. My mentor, who was my boss out there, he was about our age, basically, actually, when he passed away, actually, of lung cancer at like 43. He's a little older than us, little. And but he kind of like approached everything with a real like enthusiasm and lack of fear. Mm. And that got in me a little bit, just trying to keep that in mind. But one of the most important things I learned was from a colleague out in LA, because the boss was like making promises to the client. And I was like, yo, this is crazy. What is dude talking about? Like, we can't do that. And my colleague was like, he has no idea either. We just have to figure out how to do it. And that stuck in my head. That was like 1999 or 2000. So like 5 years ago. And and he was just, you know, and I was like, wow, like none of us really know. And none of us really know. You don't know until you're doing it.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, you know what? Same as Steven. Like, I'm sure I can get hired again. You know, I know how to draw by hand.
I know a very, very in-demand skill.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
know how to use like an ink on my line.
Yeah. I know how to. I can order coffee. I can order staples. I can do all that. I'm very valuable. So it was. I wasn't very. You know, I wasn't worried in that. In terms of failure, huh. I was actually more worried that I was going to fail myself and not take the risk, honestly. Yeah.
I mean, that's what's interesting is like talking to a few people now, that's been a bit of a common point that sort of, I mean, fearless for one thing, but also, look, I got nothing to lose, right? Mm-hmm. I've got a good foundation. If I need to get a job after this, I can do that. And because I felt the same way with a couple of steps we took, but I'm always, it's like, was that a luxury? Yeah. Or is that something, or both? I mean, it's a luxury for sure in terms of you want to have that. That's something I think not everybody can feel necessarily. But where does that come from? In terms, because part of it is like you work really hard to get to the point where you are very employable.
Yeah.
You've done all your homework to do that, and so you know you can get a job afterwards. To Stephen's point, let's say. And I do feel like that's a huge thing in terms of I can try this thing because if I fuck up, I can still buy people coffee. I can still go to Stephen's. Yeah.
Well, I mean, from my side, so I approach everything I do, I would say, as a designer, and that's for better and worse. And one of the things that at least I'm not really afraid to do, which I think is important if you're making anything, whether it's a business or a product, is be able to throw out something when it's not working and just reinvent. So I never really had, you know, a fear that there wasn't another possibility. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you get that, you know. I mean, I don't know if that's from great parents or, you know, in my mind, it's also from a lot of failure before mm-hmm. that. So I'm sure we all in different ways and different points in our life have failed, and you're like, shit, like I'm still standing, you know, mm-hmm. I'm still, and mm-hmm. like the worst case scenario, I can peel garlic again. You know, I was also a florist, so I can go back to that. Like in my head, you know, in your head, you go through everything that
your LinkedIn is very long.
If he was just trying to be happy, I think that's probably what he would do. Yeah, actually, yeah, to be honest, if that was the goal.
Yeah, my floral skills are off the chain.
This flower game is tight. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I agree with that. There's always like there's something to fall back on. Ultimately, I think for myself. You know, I mentioned on the Friday story, but I know there was like two listeners.
No, you had like probably the most so far, actually. So like five
four.
Listeners.
Yeah, four. Four at its peak, and that was like for 1 minute. I think because for myself, always, you know, I mentioned before, growing up, I was always struggling between being a B- and C+ student, and then having to between that and going to college, but then getting kicked out, and then junior college, then getting back in, and then like just like grinding like crazy to graduate to 2.6, but then having enough accolades and a nice portfolio to get accepted straight to Columbia that brought me here. I always felt like my mindset has always been like it's not going to happen unless you do it yourself. You can't wait for somebody to give it to you. You can't wait for permission. You can't wait for opportunity. It's like, if you want it, like go do it and don't wait. And for myself, when we being Jonathan, Steve and I had this opportunity to work together, I was at a place where some of the people I was collaborating with on the projects just showed to me that I can't build with them a career, a long-term relationship, and I just have to break out and figure out how to do it differently with mm-hmm. other people. And you know, it was really great that, again, sitting and didn't even know what to do next because the projects were like under development, but to break out, and then it sounds so simple, but to create a workplace that you're proud to go to every day because you know the team is enthusiastic and excited to be there, and they know that they're going to grow with you and you're going to grow with them, and a place that's like great values and transparency and ethics and all these things that just, I think people take for granted because there's few places that make that a priority. To build something that you're proud of from the inside out, starting with the team all the way to the projects and the design, et cetera. I was like waxing poetic with these guys and they were like, of course, like that would be awesome. Like, all right, so cool.
What does that take?
Yeah, we're going to start from scratch. Let's map this out. And that was the 6 months I was telling you where we were like mapping out how do you create a business like that. And of course, you know, this is only 4 years until we don't know if we're doing the right thing. But I mean, so far we're proud of a very diverse team, a team with very little attrition. The only people we've lost are people that have moved because they were getting married or for family reasons. But otherwise, you know, our team just continues to grow. And simultaneously, we've been able to do great work with great clients that keep coming back to us.
Did you, I mean, jumping way back, I guess I'll start with Steven. Actually, where'd you guys all grow up?
I'm this is Steven. I'm from North Carolina.
Born in North Carolina?
Yeah. It's called Burlington. It's like a small city, big town kind of thing, okay. Outside of Raleigh area.
It's small.
Yeah, it's small. But it's probably pretty ideal, you know, like middle class suburban.
Did you know, when you were growing up, did you know people that had started their own businesses?
My grandfather had started his business, which was in insurance. It was okay. An insurance agency when he got back from the Navy after World War II.
Okay.
And my father, you know, I would say reluctantly, followed in his footsteps and took that business over. He was a musician at heart, but you know, that's the night gig. Mm-hmm. So he did the insurance gig during the day. So I would say that probably seeing both of them, you know, run a business and talk about the benefits, at least the intrinsic benefits of owning your own thing, mm-hmm. Probably got in there a little bit. I don't think consciously, but I think probably in retrospect it did.
Did you know as a kid that you wanted to do something on your own?
No, I don't think so. I think my second grade art teacher tells me that I told her that I wanted to design G.I. Joes.
You still do.
So, I probably still do. But
actually, that makes sense. That's why you did.
Yeah, Cry Precision. That really was a dream project. I don't recall that, but I believe her that she's correct that I said that. So, but my point is, at some point soon thereafter, I decided I wanted to be an architect for whatever reason, and so I just always just assumed that's what I would be doing. And I don't even think I necessarily put it together that there would be entrepreneurial outlets in that. You know, I just thought I would go work for an architect until some point, you know.
And I know, Jonathan, you were saying you never really wanted to start a thing on your own until the continent opportunity was there, and you thought that was a good thing, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just a personality trait.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking actually a little bit like one of the cool parts about having these two partners, at least, is that they push me out of my comfort zone on different things, and they probably help me see myself differently. But I didn't grow up. My parents are, they were like, my dad taught continuation high school, and my mom taught special ed, and so great in terms of...
Did they meet through education? Do you know?
Nah, I think my dad just picked my mom up like on the lawn on the campus, you know, kind of thing, just the way that people do. But I would say that, and so there wasn't like a sense of entrepreneurship, but they were very...
Damn, we are making our way through this tea.
I've got a little bit of a cold. But one of the things I think is that they were always encouraging, right? Like, because they were teachers, I wouldn't have known that growing up, you know, that doesn't dawn on you. But encouraging and being like to take certain risks and just try to find out who you are and do things that, you know, give you the juice.
And you're from?
From the Bay Area, right? Next to Berkeley, California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next to
a little town called Albany, which you know. You were out there, yeah. It was previously the garbage dump of Berkeley, so I got a chip on my shoulder that I carry with me every day here in New York. Whatever. I mean, I thought I was going to be a jazz musician for a while.
Really?
Yeah. Then it became a florist. Originally, it was a truck driver, but that didn't work out.
Did you try it?
No, I was just inspired.
Okay. But how did you, I mean, you even said you didn't necessarily want to be an architect at first. Like, where did you fall into architecture?
I was originally doing, like, I think I was, like, kind of design oriented, but I didn't know it because, some people know, I just didn't know. I was trying to be, like, a jock back in high school. I was trying to do other things that I wasn't good at.
Were you a football player?
Right, I was a football player I wasn't really good. I was a team captain, but I think that's just because I swept the locker room every day.
And effort guy.
It was an effort, yeah. And I cared about the environment in the locker room and the way the space looked. I used to decorate it.
Brought flowers?
Yeah, brought flowers. I did bring it all together. I do have stories about that.
Foreshadowing a little bit.
But Yeah, so I sort of just...
Wait, what position did you play?
I was super large when I was 14. I was like 5'6", 225, which is like a sphere. And so I started out playing offensive line, nice. And then I eventually...
Like an unmovable sphere.
Yeah, I became the smallest offensive lineman in our league, actually, but I stayed there for 4 years. And I got used to being on the bottom of the pile and doing a lot of work. But yeah, you know, I just, I did product design to start with. I was doing I wanted to design like Nikes really bad.
This was in school or this was where was this?
Yeah, I went to, when I went to college.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, but somewhere along the line, now my brother's an architect too, interesting. And he's one of the people who knew early on he wanted to do that.
Is that older?
Yeah, older. And I was like, you need to know math. You know all this stuff. And I was like, I don't want to know all that stuff.
Turns out you don't need to know math.
You don't need to know math.
Still don't know math. You don't need to know how to do
it. Yeah. but, you know, in the back of my head, I think there was a component. One of the things for me that I don't really tell people very often is that I'm into the, like, what, like, designing can do for other people, socially, business.
Why don't you tell people that very often?
Because I don't have a radio show yet. But once I do, I'll be like, that was a motivation when I was doing product design towards the end of, like, my training. It was like, it was a little like too commercial in a way. And at the time I was like, I found architecture was addressing some things I thought were important about communities, people, how people feel.
Did you make a switch in your major during
I didn't. I mean, at the very end, I did a kind of like an independent study, and then I was just like, F it. I took the GRE. Like, I just like picked up a book. I couldn't study, so I burnt it. And then took a GREs when I went to school.
For like warmth?
Yeah. I was in Michigan, so I was freezing. But so I just did it. Like, you know what, just go and see. And I don't really know what motivated that other than this idea that something that we could make could like have a really positive impact on other people. So I just kind of keep that now even.
I mean, so for listeners, Brady brought up, you're half Asian, half black. Mm-hmm.
What kind of Asian? Jeprican.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have? Was there anybody that looked like you or either side of you growing up that you're like, oh shit, that person is doing something amazing that I want to do?
Nas.
Yeah.
Very few people, honestly. But you know, I was never overly concerned with that until a little bit later in life. Like, that wasn't the only motivation. But, I felt definitely like, why not? Like, why don't I get a chance to, I don't know, I just see people like, you know, people. And, you know, a big deal was like when you get into doing art and design, it's people look at you for what you make and a little bit less about like just what you appear to be. And that was liberating for me, honestly, to like just be like, yeah, this is this thing. I don't have to wake up and be like, I'm black, I'm Japanese, how do I rep it? I just woke up being like, I'm going to like rep myself and like my sensibility, which is, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, talking about equity and all of us trying to like kind of get ahead. Like, that's where I wanted to be, was just like not worried, just like make something for who you are. And if you're lucky, and this is kind of like a slightly libertarian Republican point of view in a way, if you're lucky, you can pass, just your example can pass that on in a way to other people, you know, like.
Sorry, just your example. What do you mean by that?
By pursuing what you actually are passionate about and what you're good at and what you, I think really like that kind of like that joy, if people realize your enthusiasm, it cuts through a lot and it becomes a bridge, you know. And kind of retroactively, I think, you know, people can be a ladder for younger people or people who are in a position where they don't feel like they can get ahead. And like, that's something that, you know, I like to think that I do by example, not necessarily I don't verbalize it very often.
When you started getting into design, first with product design, then architecture, I guess, did you have a conscious sense that, and I'd never really actually thought about this until you just mentioned it, but that field, let's say the general creative field of design was Was it more welcoming? Was it more inclusive for basically just because architecture is still pretty white?
Yeah.
But certainly other
and that's where we got Stephen. Stephen's our in.
He's that golden ticket.
I want to say though, Stephen is honorary Asian because his approach, his thinking, deal. His mentality, his values. The dude even has like a Buddhist tattoo on his chest and an Asian wife.
If you guys could see actually right now, Stephen's shirt is off.
So
pretty warm.
You look great, yeah. But I'm curious because, like, you know, the what you said was interesting in terms of when you're designing, people kind of judge you, let's say, or look at you for what your output is, what your work is, not necessarily for what your person looks like.
Yeah,
I mean, that's from the jump.
That's what you hope. That's what people like me hope. Mm-hmm. And I can't control other people, but I mean, I think we see it right going on now more and more. You know, most of the like way we judge each other is fear-based. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky because growing up, if you grew up in the Bay Area, it's a very privileged place to grow up in terms of identity. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty mixed pot. And when I went away to, I was lucky enough to go away to school, and I chose to go far away from home because that's how you keep learning. And I had my first identity crises as they related to at least my culture by the time I got to college. It was so 18 years, and all of a sudden you have, I mean, that's not the first time, but like that was a time. And for me, actually, I was in art school at the time, and that became.
So where was this?
It was in Michigan. University of Michigan, and it was the first time that I had to like, I actually like art and what I was making became a kind of refuge for that identity crisis, and people were just like, oh wow, that's so cool what you made, you know, like, and that was very reaffirming. So it sort of clicked in my head, and it was, oh, I was only 19 then, but it clicked in my head. I'm like, yeah, that was like 6 years ago. So like it clicked in my head that you know, I could invest in this thing that could sidestep the kind of like normal identity mm-hmm. talk that was around me at the time. And I thought, wow, what a great way to try to get like a seat at the table. Mm. Like, you know, I got ideas like everybody else. And so you're just trying to figure out what is the avenue to give you a shot.
Well, there was, I don't remember where this quote was from, but, I was reading an article the other day on gray fleece vests mm-hmm. and why they're so popular in the finance world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an entertaining article. Mm. But one of the last quotes in it was something to do with like everybody wants to succeed, and if you want to succeed, you got to blend in, which is the reasoning for why everybody's wearing these gray mm-hmm. fleece vests anyway. But I thought that was actually obviously any kind of creative endeavor, that's the opposite is true. Like you need to stand out. Mm-hmm. You need to be different. You need to kind of bring something new to the table. The whole point of any kind of arts, I think, is always looking for new ideas, progress, something different. And this may be a stretch, but I'm curious, like, does that industry, the creative industry, whether it's art, architecture, music, whatever, is that one reason why it might be more inclusive to, like, there isn't a kind of model for what a successful artist looks like there it may be in the finance world, let's say.
You know, I would say, and this is actually kind of, Jonathan will probably be able to speak better to it than this. So one of the things that Jonathan, Stephen, and I share personality-wise is we are pretty introverted by nature. We're pretty low-key. We keep to ourselves. I realize we sound like social idiots, but there's a reason why. You know, I always joke, like, if you were to ever go onto our website, we put up like a 30-second music video, which is our tribute to New York City, but it is because we, by nature, are reluctant to put ourselves out there. Mm. And we've just been all about our work and doing really great things with our team. But what's interesting is that we didn't intend this, but we ended up building a portfolio of, a hospitality portfolio of restaurants. Many of them, you know, after Masa, we started to get more notable chefs, a lot of them of the critically acclaimed. And so of the venues that are out there, and I know we've all gone to hang out with them, they're quite popular and busy mm-hmm. and everything. What's crazy is that they're these very busy social places, and they are, for us, we see the where culture and society is going. It's like restaurants have become like these gathering places. I think internally we joke in our office, like if 2000 was like Rem talking about shopping malls, you know, retail is unfortunately changing. Hmm. Unfortunately. But the shopping mall isn't really the gathering place, isn't the forum mm-hmm. that it was once written about. But restaurants have become that. And so as subtle and introverted as we are, we design these very public, super busy gathering places. A lot of it is spearheaded by our creative director. And I think a lot of the feedback people will get from our restaurants, because we don't go for the theatrical, you know, we are not trying to be the next Norman. Is it
David?
Sorry. See, that's because we
shout out to David Rockwell.
Lots of respect.
We're also not trying to be the next Norman Rockwell.
Yeah. See, shout out to Norman Rockwell.
We respect, but look up to him so little. I didn't even know his name was David. But seriously, lots of respect to the Rockwell
really
team.
Not.
But the thing is that it's really interesting because you get like arguably the quietest guys designing the most popular spaces, mm-hmm. whether it's the Masa restaurants or Code or Shuko or, you know, the 70 Pine project for Chef James Kent and a few others we have in the pipeline. It's just really interesting.
But it's interesting also, like, you know, whether it's personality, whether it's background or ethnicity or upbringing. Mm-hmm. The output at the end of the day, I think, is sort of what is the most visible and ideally should be what you're kind of, let's say, judged on. Mm-hmm. But it's also, any kind of creative field, it's so personal, yeah. right? Like, everything you put into it is directly from the people that are creating it. Again, I don't know if this is fair because I don't think any of us are in these industries, but like unlike a finance, unlike medicine, unlike fields that I think are less creative in that mm-hmm. classical sense, the persona that's doing it potentially has less effect on the outcome. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. there's also, I don't know where I'm going with this. I just feel like in creative worlds, in virtually everybody we're interviewing, arts, music, food, architecture, yeah. it's a much more diverse crowd than I think a lot of other industries might be. Yeah. And I feel like for anybody, you know, again, our hope is that kids who are young, trying to figure out what they're doing, and mm-hmm. don't quite fit in, don't necessarily want to fit in,
yeah.
there's actually worlds of rad shit out there that you can do in arts, whatever that might mean,
yeah,
in
absolutely.
Creativity. And not only because it's fun to do yeah. and you love doing it, but actually it can be very welcoming.
Yeah.
And certainly can be also very unwelcoming, depending if you.
Well, I mean, even dicks, the way we evolve, we've come into this profession, I would say, let's say, with three different like starting points in, or we have three different positions in it now. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of opportunities, I think, for sure. And it's kind of endless and it's kind of undefined. Mm-hmm. So I think you get a chance to define who you want to be in it. And I mean, we're seeing it more now, like Virgil, right? It's mm-hmm. an amazing kind of like iconic thing that happened in a way mm-hmm. in our generation, and there's definitely people before him. And I feel like it is a welcoming place. The great part about it is that it's really about your effort and your enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And the other things melt away when you get to actually just produce something from in you. But it takes a lot. You have to be willing to stand in there when things are uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I will say this, though. This is to what Jonathan's saying, is that, you know, what's really interesting, people always ask, like, what does MN stand for? And it's funny because when we came up with the name, we purposely chose a name that would be obscure and confusing. We literally chose the letters M and N because we liked it formally, in terms of the form.
Graphically.
Yeah. But specifically chose two letters because three sounds like it could be an acronym for our last names, but two sounds like it might be some type of symbol, whether it's like from like chemistry or religion or whatever.
I think it's manganese.
Maybe. Is it manganese? Is it? Or is Minneapolis. It
really?
Minnesota, yeah. But we literally chose a name that we always said, like, it's literally not going to... It has no meaning. So And the reason why we did that is we want to build, we said we want to change the practice of architecture. We want to build something that wasn't unique to any three of us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about Jonathan or myself or about Stephen. It's about the whole team. And so
shout out to the team.
Shout out to the team who I believe is, if you're not listening, if you're not the eight people that I see listed as the eight listeners that we currently have, there's going to be words later. But yeah, you know, we built a company that is about the team, and something that we're really proud of is, you know, you don't hear about this much in architecture, but a team where we really, our values are about getting great people, giving them opportunities to succeed, but in a great environment where we're not trying to make the team work. This sounds crazy. We're not trying to have the team work more than 45, 50 hours a week, tops. We're trying to pay market rate salaries or more. We're trying to, like, give them opportunities to grow and, you know, learn everything they can to be the best that they can be, and for us to give them the... if it's not with MN, to move on elsewhere. Fortunately, they've all stayed with us. But this is a thing. It's like
up until this interview, anyway.
Right, right.
The whole team's going to quit tomorrow. Get back to an empty office.
Anybody quitting, you guys can call in, quit on the air if you want.
But that's the thing, is that, and we do this because we want people from different backgrounds, whether, you know, economic, social, whatever, to be able to come into the profession of architecture. And if you're passionate about it, that this is an opportunity for you to succeed. And, you know, I know you and I don't talk about this ad nauseum about how this profession favors people from privileged backgrounds, that you know, like students that will come and be willing to work for below market or free just to get their foot in the door. And it's like, that's not, that favors a very specific demographic. So what we're building at MN, we think of it really as a team. You'll never hear any one of us, Jonathan, Stephen, and I, talk about we're the ones that brought to where it is. Mm. We're always, our values are about the team that's brought us here, the way we operate. I think you've seen it when we work together. Our teams are the ones who are present, working with the clients. And yeah, I think that's like, you know, when Jonathan's talking about, you know, this is an opportunity for anybody who wants to really do it, who are passionate about the creative industry and want to see how they can have an impact. These are the platforms that there should be more of these. And mm-hmm. so we don't, granted, we're 4 years into it and we've been able to do it so far, and we want to use this to be like something that is a game changer, mm-hmm. and other firms can follow as a model. But it's something that we deeply believe in. You know, it's like giving opportunities to others who want to get into this industry.
So I just want to, I mean, we've been through a number of, things that you guys did right, mm-hmm. I guess.
A handful, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In terms of, you know, finding each other. And I mean, in terms of doing it right, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not intentionally, but I think everybody kind of goes through that. Nobody has laid out the roadmap perfectly from day one. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the fun of it. But, like, you know, finding each other, and that counts a lot for identifying, even subconsciously, the type of people that you need to bring on to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, falling in love with some sort of creative or design thing early on, having kind of supportive communities or whatever you're coming up. So I just wanted to zero in on one moment, and because I think the mechanics, and this was specifically Cry Precision, when you said that was a project that you started the office with. Mm-hmm. Right? And it doesn't have to be about Cry, obviously, but I'm just thinking anybody that's trying to start an office with friends or not, it's always that question. It's like, how the fuck do you get that first client? Where does that come from? How do you, I get, mm-hmm. you know, I can aspire to the values. I can get that I want to work with people I don't work with. I can set up as much vision as I want to do, but then there's the mechanics of how do I get that dollar in? Who do I, mm-hmm. So how did that come about?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're the best. I think we've been very
fortunate.
You're
the best. Just
I was going to say the best example, and then I just trailed off, but... Yeah, I think we've been very fortunate. I mean, Cry in particular was a case where they're a very cool company. They're run
by... What do they do?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. They design and fabricate military gear. So protective gear for special forces in the U.S. military. They also supply some police departments with, you know, think in terms of like bulletproof vests mm-hmm. and holsters, and but also jackets and pants and tactical gear. They have their own camouflage pattern that they developed that's widely used in the U.S. military.
They were actually on the Bin Laden raid. All their stuff was used.
Yeah,
that's so nuts.
Yeah, they have something back in their showroom wow. that got like shot up on that raid that someone brought
that's
them
so
back.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But so that's their customer is you know okay. the badass you know SEAL Team 6 guy and his buddies. It's a very cool company founded by a couple of guys right out of Cooper Union. One was an engineer, one was a fine arts guy, but they described each other as like the fine arts guy was the one that was like auditing engineering courses, and the engineer was the one that was like in the studio, like finding out what they were doing, you know, whatever they met there. But they have a very cool company. It's young. I mean, they're in their, I don't know. They seem like they're in their early to mid 40s.
That's really young.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think the company itself is nearly 20 years old or thereabouts. A guy I went to school with was their graphic designer and was doing their photography and setting their catalog and website. You know, for their products. Mm. They needed more or less like a project manager and had the thought that they were going to get like someone kind of like 1099 style just to come on and work 3 days a week or whatever. And so my buddy reached out to myself and a couple of our friends that all went to school together at Virginia Tech and asked if anyone would be interested. And I told him yes, but that I'd want to see if I could, you know, loop it into the firm.
When you say they were looking for a project manager, you mean for an architecture project?
So they were moving. They've kind of organically grown in the Navy Yard over 15 years mm-hmm. to leasing more and more space. But like their warehouse was in Building 3, their design studios were in 278. You know, their some of their sewing rooms were in Building 5. So their process of running the business included like trucking through the yard, product that was half made. So they signed a lease with the Navy Yard in Building 128, which is a gorgeous historic structure used to build engines for the ships that were being built in the dry docks right there in World War II and probably the couple of years after that. So they got 90,000 square feet under one roof. And at that time, the Navy Yard was renovating that building, doing the shell. And so they needed someone to kind of come in and be their representative during that process. We did some early schematic design for them and laid out their space so that we could instruct the Navy Yard, hey, you were going to put in 8 stairs anyway, but can we have them here mm-hmm. instead of where mm-hmm. you were going to put them? And did some things so that, you know, wouldn't have to immediately rip out what had just been built.
And at this time, when that offer was made of we need a PM, and you're like, hey, I could do this, were you working somewhere else?
I was.
Okay.
I was.
And was this something that you'd have to leave that firm or wherever you were to jump on this, or you thought you could do it part-time?
Yeah, well, so what my mindset was at the time was actually about bringing it to the firm I was at. So I did that at first. And over that, I'd say like 9 months or so, maybe a little more, you know, built a relationship with those guys, and I was the point person. Mm-hmm. I was the one that was meeting with them and meeting with the Navy Yard and getting their modifications done through that. So when it came time to do the actual fit out for them and launch their project within the space, I asked if they'd be open to working with me because I was going to go mm-hmm. Go out on my own mm-hmm. more or less, and they. Showed a tremendous amount of trust and did. And so that was the kind of the impetus for me.
I mean, what's funny with that is like, you know, the fact that you were connected through a friend or a friend reached out to his or her friends and like, hey, does anybody want to do this? Is not something that you can be like, just do that.
Yeah, I know it.
But it's so common, right? It's always
it is.
Somewhere along the way, you're going to meet someone that maybe a few years later might have an opportunity.
I will say that it's so true because like all these fortuitous moments that allowed you to get to where you are. But it's, I'm going to butcher the quote because I'm terrible at quoting shit. I have bad audio tape, as I like to say.
You're good at rap lyrics, though.
I'm good, but not actually rapping. I've been this close last Friday.
Just reading.
While as an aspiring rapper, I can't even karaoke rap. So, but it's that, whatever is that quote that, like, it's like you create your own luck by always being prepared.
Okay.
And I think that was a classic example of, like, when the opportunity was there, Steven was already ready and equipped to take it on.
Exactly.
And it's like that always being prepared part, I think, is what's gotten us to where we are now. Because the one thing I was going to add is the common denominator between Cry Precision and all the clients that have allowed us to get to where we are now is that they're all super ambitious people who are at inflection points in their career. And, you know, because if you're going to do architecture and you just raised all this money to do your next headquarters or whatever, that's a big deal. And so what's interesting is I would say the majority of our major clients, and if it's like, if I had to name drop, it's going to be like Alicia Keys and Swiss Beats and Ashley Graham, or the people we're going to interview later tonight, Dao Yi Chow, Maxwell Osborne, and a lot of these Michelin-rated chefs that work with us, is that when you're at that inflection point in your career, you look to other peers who are also at theirs, and you want to build with them because you're in the same place and understand what it means to, like, the hard work to get to that moment. And then you want to collaborate and build it with somebody who is in it with you. And so if you were to talk to any of those guys, it'll be like, the reason why we love working with the MN team is these guys are hungry. Like, we're all trying to build together. And so I think even, you know, I say this many times, but even the opportunity for MN to work with Food on Hypebeast, and even Kevin Ma, CEO and founder of Hypebeast, like building the New York headquarters and everything, it's all about these inflection points that we're all teaming up together. It's just kind of like, let's just build. And that's what's gotten us to where we are today, and it's what's made this so enjoyable. I can tell you, John and Steve and I, we have our weekly manager meetings that we sit down together and strategize the week. And it's interesting because as stressful as the week gets, we genuinely enjoy the work. Like, this is so fun right now. Even though it stresses us the fuck out. But it's really fun. I mean, we're building something we believe in.
Yeah.
And we build it with people that we believe in, like whether it's the clients or even with you and your team on the Hypebeast. So, yeah, this is good.
It was a good time for us. Pleasure that we get to work with you guys.
100%.
Pleasure that we get to talk with you guys.
Yep.
Oh, I thought it was to do with the camera. Just food, guys. What's up, food, guys?
Yeah. Just for anybody who's listening, we got to, just because every film architecture firm has their own film crew, film crew flew in from, award-winning film crew flew in from Ohio.
And they're arriving soon, right?
That's right.
All right, so you guys will be around for the next hour and a half or so, 2 hours.
Yeah. Got the not safe for work music coming.
That's
out.
Right.
Yeah. And
eating lots of candy.
Chinatown candy. FYI, come if by. Anybody came here looking for Skittles, you came to the wrong spot.
Red, thank you for spending your afternoon with us.
Yeah. Let me just say thank you to Dong Ping Wong Food. We've got several folks here in the studio. Yeah. Well, they feel it. It's been a real honor just hanging out with you for the last hour. Yeah,
thanks.
Enjoyed it.
Cool. We'll talk to you guys again soon, actually, when Dao Yi and Max will get here.
Okay, all right.
Now back to Jonathan's playlist, but you need to log in first because I can't get in here.
That's how you know we're partners. Steven's got my password.
Damn.
Yeah, that's right.
I wrote your password.
Where do you want to start your playlist back up at?
I want to do it on 15 Minutes of Fame, number 2.
Word.
Oh, at the top of the list there. We got...
Thank everybody, the five people on the radio listening. Shout-outs to the team. Shout-outs to the family and the partners.
Bye.
Shout-outs to Food. Talk to you guys at 5 p.m. with Public School.